Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, I accompany Nick Cowan, a senior rights of way officer, as he inspects some bridleway clearing in a forestry commission wood in South Wiltshire. For more than 19 years, Nick's been responsible for over 2,000 kilometres of public rights of way. He's an accomplished photographer and musician, and recently he's turned his hand to writing about his work through the eyes of an early 19th century pedestrian tourist. Tell us a bit about where we're going and what we're doing, and is this a typical sort of thing you do?
Well, it's sort of typical. We're going to look at some clearance work that was done by my contractor. As I mentioned, this is Forestry Commission land. We're clearing this one, even though some of the side growth is actually their responsibility. It's a tit-for-tat thing, because they're going to clear another route that's got trees on it, which is, to get it back onto its legal route, it needs a fair bit of tree clearance, and they're going to do that. And that's the harder of the two jobs, so I'm happy for them to do that. And so I'm just going to go and look, make sure our bit has been done. It's sort of typical of what I do, but in some ways it's the best bits, because you're just out walking, and the only way to get there is to walk, and you've got to go and look at it. So
now, okay, so for those people who are listening and they're not familiar with rights of way, can you sort of explain what is a right of way and why are people like you employed to do what you do, and then maybe we'll go on to what you actually do.
Okay, all right, yeah. One way of explaining what a right of way is, they are highways in the same way that roads are highways. They're all looked after by the Highways Act. So a footpath is actually a highway for pedestrians. A bridleway is a highway for pedestrians and horse riders and cyclists. The Highway Authority, who I work for, are responsible for maintaining them. So it's my job to go out and ensure that they're usable.
Some of these rights of way are really ancient, and
yeah,
some are less so. Can you explain something about the history, and perhaps particularly in this area of South Wiltshire?
They are very ancient. They've been walked into existence. These are routes that are there because people needed to use them. Functional routes. Routes to church, to the inn, to work, really, across the state land.
And working in the field. So you sort of left your village and walked out into a field.
Yeah, and it's a very rural area, so there's a real sort of network of small paths linking all these different areas. And in time, those same routes, I suppose, became official. The ultimate process is for them to record them on what we call the definitive map, which is the legal document held at County Hall in Trowbridge. That's the legal document that we refer to if there's issues about the line of a route or the status of a route.
Why should there be any issue over a line of a route?
This is a very, say, rural area. It's heavily cultivated, for a start. So if you imagine the route goes across the field, the farmer is entitled to plough it, but he has to reinstate it. And so we have to inform them where that line is if they don't know. That's one recurring issue. The development, a new estate gets built, it's got a right of way across it. That then becomes a focus of attention, because suddenly the house is surrounded by houses, you know, so it's, for me, a kind of open place, you know, an open walk is suddenly a pavement. So that becomes under scrutiny. So once you start scrutinising where a path goes, you do need some assistance, and that's what the definitive map does.
Now, for yourself, you're responsible for a huge mileage of paths, a sort of total distance of paths and bridleways that you're responsible for.
There's about 8,000 kilometres of rights of way in Wiltshire. So that's sort of roughly divided up into four areas, but this is the larger area.
If you're, let's say, responsible for 2,000 kilometres, have you walked every kilometre?
I think I might have done. I mean, I occasionally come across routes that I haven't walked or I can't remember walking. So I've been doing this for 19 years, so, you know, there are memory is a funny thing, you know. So there are moments when I think, have I been here before? What you do is that knowledge that you've gained. I mean, I can sit in the office. I've got an office with a computer, obviously, and that's the centre of operations for me. But so if somebody rings me and says, look, I've got a problem. And I say, where is it? And they say, well, you won't know it. And I say, well, try me. And so eventually we can narrow it down to a horse trough next to a gate, you know, somewhere in a far-flung parish, one of 76 parishes in my area. And we can talk about it in some detail because I can remember it, you know. And we probably even resolve the issue on the phone, you know. So it's that knowledge, you know, if you can start sort of, you know, recalling these things, is very useful.
But you do also use technology now quite a bit in your work. So what sort of I mean, do you have sort of GPS mobile phone and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And
yeah, we're supposed to be getting a data capture system, because when we maintain the rights of way, we've traditionally done it in a parish-by-parish basis. And so we survey the rights of way within the parish. We then prioritise the work within that parish. Because I've got one contractor doing this work, 76 parishes. So you can understand the kind of scale of things. So we do the signing and the bridges, and we negotiate with landowners about stiles and gates and that sort of thing, and clearance. And then, hopefully, we move on to the next one. And obviously, it's like the fourth bridge. You know, you get around eventually, but things have sort of changed, or somebody's done something, so things are never finished. What we didn't have was a record of inspection that was exact to this precise path. And so we've had to address that. So we've now got two inspectors. It's his job, actually, to go do the good bit, go and walk them all.
The county has employed another person to inspect the work that's carried out by your contractor. Is that what you're saying?
No, they do a survey of the condition of the right-of-way as it is, mainly by photograph. And so we've got a visual inspection and a record. And the primary purpose behind that wasn't actually to improve maintenance, but it's to safeguard us against prosecution for negligence.
OK, so going back to this area of South Wiltshire, what drew you to become a rights-of-way warden, A? And B, was it something about... did you come from this area?
Well, I grew up in South Wiltshire. I grew up on a farm, and we, being lads, had the sort of the run of the place. We just went off and roamed around, so spent days out walking. So an awful lot of time spent rooting about, being boys. I think that's where it all started.
So with the rights of way, I mean, you're now paid to be not reckless, but certainly to wander.
Yeah, paid to wander in a more structured kind of way.
Do you do it because you want to safeguard those opportunities for other young people? Is that something that sort of goes through your mind when you think back?
Well, I suppose it's sort of subconsciously, I guess. I mean, one of the things, the first job I actually had was waymarking for the farm. The farm, this was back in the late 60s, I suppose. The farmer had a whole stack of waymarks, and he asked me and my brother to go and put them up. Well, I guess we had a map, but I hope we put them up in the right places. But actually, that was the first bit of rights-of-way work I did. I must have been about nine or something. So it sort of instilled at that point. Then I moved away, went to university, got a fine art degree, which actually bears no, not a lot of relation to what I do now. But I got a job with a charity in Wilton, the Birnbeck Trust, whose one of their roles was actually clearing rights-of-way. So I got back into it that way. I started clearing rights-of-way. Got to know my predecessor, the rights-of-way warden. He left once the job was created in about 1988, I think. He did it for about a year and a half, and he was quite ambitious and moved on. And, I'm obviously not that ambitious, because I then got his job and I'm still here.
OK, so now what do we need to do? Do you need to walk this route?
I'm going to walk it, yeah.
OK, so
because it's a circuit, we can walk this and walk back round, so it's just as easy to go this way.
Perfect, well, let's do it.
Basically, it's a bridleway. There's a lot of hazel on both sides, as you can see. In fact, hazel... it's a phenomenal species because it's sort of sustained life since the sort of end of the last ice age for hunter-gatherers, and not only the nuts but the timber, the wood, the amount of things you can make out of hazel. And it went right through, obviously, through the agricultural practices, hurdle making, for thatching and that kind of thing. So it's ubiquitous in South Wiltshire, but it needs coppicing. So many hazel bushes tend to sort of get overgrown. But one of the other aspects to hazel, which I was going to mention, is about sticks and thumb sticks.
Mm-hmm.
The tradition of taking the thumbstick, which is a sort of good countryman's tool. You know. Well, I haven't got one today, but I always have a stick with me. I realised after messing about with various sticks, the traditional one is obviously to get a cleft in the stick so you can put your thumb in it. But actually, what you really want is if you're going to use a stick to knock back undergrowth around stiles or knock a bramble out of the way, what you really want is a slightly whippier piece of hazel. And you want the thin end, at the end, you want to be holding on to the thicker end.
Right.
Whereas if you have a cleft in the hazel...
Yeah, you want to do the opposite way around.
And people with their treasured sticks, they keep them for years and they get dry and you couldn't hit anything with it, it would just break. So what I tend to do is have numerous ones throughout the season. They're pretty disposable. So you select a reasonably straight hazel trunk of the right size and cut it off right at the bottom, because then you get a nice little curve which actually acts as a handle. And then it's a multi-purpose tool.
So that I can see that there's a project here. There's a project developing.
Well, the project actually, I thought about it, which I've yet to do, is to make a small video on YouTube to show the benefits and uses of a hazel stick. But in my work, I mean, I've used a hazel stick for some prodding ground that I'm not sure about the depth of the mud. I've even poked down a big branch that was hanging way above my head. A ton of oak hanging up there. And I got the weight and just prodded it and the whole thing came down. You can stick it under your arm with the back, with so that you've got most of it sticking out behind you. So if you're walking across a field of horses, they come up behind you, which inevitably they do, start grabbing at your pack.
Yeah.
They just hit themselves on the nose and they get fed up with that and they go off.
These are the tricks of the trade.
This is an essential tool, really, for the Rights of Way Warden.
Okay, so how did you get into the writing?
It adds to the job, and it adds to the interest I've got in it. So it might be geological, or it might be archaeological. The opportunity is there to try and understand the landscape a bit better. And I think that's what I started doing back to 10, 12 years ago. Actively researching, actively buying books about the landscape and reading more about it and the characters and the individuals and the history. And gradually you sort of suddenly have a sort of massive information. You've got to do something with it. And that's what came out of it.
What's the book called, the character?
The character's name is Henry Chalk. He's a young Londoner who comes down to South Wiltshire for reasons that are described in the book.
And it's set in what period?
It's set in 1807, the first book. Napoleonic War's still going on. It means you can't really travel in Europe. And so he was a pedestrian tourist.
And now what sort of age is he, the character?
He was 17 when he started, and he sort of turned 18 by the time of the second book. And it's done in the style of the time, which is sort of like a domestic travelogue. And the pattern was you travel, you write your account in a series of letters to another person. You then retrieve those letters, or that other person then published them. But usually along the way there's a lot of embellishment that went on from the actual walking and viewing and writing, and then by the time it got published there's a lot more got sort of stirred into the mix, usually copying other people. Some people never actually walked at all, they just copy and write the book. But the other odd aspect to it is they often publish them anonymously, because it's some sort of I suppose a fashionable thing. A lot of books were published anonymously, so I thought I might as well be true to the genre. So I wrote the book, set it out in a series of letters, and published it anonymously.
And that's sold, and you've now done a second one?
Yeah, the second in the sequel, same character, further adventures of. There's going to be three eventually.
Okay, and you've got it all mapped out, so you know where else he's walking.
Yeah.
And he's basically walking your patch.
He is. You write what you know, don't you?
Yeah.
The biggest problem I've had is, you can imagine, if you're walking, you can cover a fair distance in a day. And if that's all you're doing is walking. So how am I going to keep him, restrain him for a certain area? So I had to sort of, into that, write in sort of certain things that held him up, like twisting his ankle immediately as soon as he arrives in Salisbury, and that stops him for a while. So he then has to sort of recover, and gives him an opportunity to look around Wilton and actually Groveley Woods and places like that. So it's a little devices that you put in to kind of stall him.
Okay, so now are you going to tell me about William Hazlitt?
Yeah, William Hazlitt, the essayist who lived from sort of late 18th century to about sort of 1840-odd. He spent a period of time in South Wiltshire, at Winterslow. He wrote a lot of his work, actually, in the Winterslow Hut, which is now the Pheasant Inn, which is now closed on the London Road. That was after he came back to Wiltshire, because obviously he liked walking. He used to think while he was walking. That was his thing. He'd go out and he'd just want to walk. The process of walking, I think, that really got his brain working. And so he could then sort of detach itself from the physical, as long as he was walking. In the zone.
Yeah.
And he intrigued me, William Hazlitt. I wanted to include him in the second book. He married his first wife, Sarah, and lived in Winterslow for a couple of years. They had a child. The first child died. The second child survived. And later on, they got divorced because he was an incredibly difficult person. He was very uncompromising, extreme views, impossible person to live with, I imagine. But at the same time, he had this sort of clear and very lucid sort of thought process that he'd walk and he'd think and he'd chew these things over, mull them over. And so at the end of the...
I'm just going to get you to walk a bit further, because that car is... Because I think we're going to get hit by more cars while you read, and that could be a disaster.
So it just intrigued me that he was in Wiltshire at all, and it was also a very unsung character. You could try and buy a book by William Hazlitt in the bookshop, you know, you won't find one. But some of his stuff, like the description of meeting Coleridge, you know, it's fantastic, because he was a young man then, and he talks about meeting Coleridge and being in awe of this character. He was very much larger than life, and meeting him and walking in along the sort of Somerset coastline, Minehead. So I wanted to include him. So I was just going to read you this bit from the second book, because Henry Chalk, the subject of the book, meets Hazlitt. They walk, and at the end of their walk, Hazlitt just walks away and leaves Henry to it. As he's leaving, he explains about walking, what walking is for him. These are my words, not Hazlitt's. "Walking alone is the path to all good thoughts, Mr. Chalk, whether you be a poet, painter or pedestrian. I crave company in the city and solitude in the country, and I'm not for criticising hedgerows and black cattle. I simply wish to see my vague notions float like the down of thistle before the breeze. Once I begin, I am elsewhere, in the grateful motion of walking, with the blood doing what blood does around the body. I sense the beauty that envelops, the gate now an entrance to my thoughts, the bridge adjoins two estranged notions, and the bramble tears at the skin, but shall not disturb me from my meditations. Solvitur ambulando, Mr. Chalk.
Do you get enjoyment out of the writing? Is that something you do at the sort of end of the day?
Beginning of the day.
Yeah.
Quite often before I come to work. I haven't been writing for a few months now. So
it takes quite a lot of discipline to write.
It does, yeah. You have to be fairly preoccupied. You have to be disciplined, and you're just basically obsessed. I think that's how many things happen.
People who go out walking in the countryside, they probably, you know, would love to have your job.
Oh, God, yeah. No, it's I get that all the time. What a fantastic job. And they sort of eyes glaze over, and they just imagine themselves doing this wonderful job. And it is a good job. Well, I definitely try not to take it for granted.
But, I mean, it's such a huge area that you have to cover. I mean, Wiltshire must be... I mean, it must be in the top five in terms of largest or longest networks or largest area of land to cover, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's fairly... I mean, it's an impossible task. I mean, if you have one of these obsessive natures where you had to get everything done, it would drive you completely mad. Because things don't happen like that. You have to be far more sort of...
I can say you'd spend the whole... all your time just cutting back vegetation. I mean, vegetation keeps growing.
Well, that always, yeah. And that takes a big... In the summer, for 3 months a year, the last especially wet summers we've had, vegetation's rampant.
Have you ever been tempted to get involved in sort of long-distance walks or trails?
We have some long-distance walks, as you probably know, but Avon Valley Path, the Wessex Ridgeway goes here, the Monarch's Way seems to go everywhere. Years ago, we had an idea of doing a round Wiltshire walk, but it never came to anything. We just basically got too much to do with the day-to-day stuff, you know. It definitely is an undiscovered territory, and there's places that are just phenomenal. I mean, there's places I get drawn to.
So, where would you recommend going for a walk?
I'll tell you one walk, which... it's not easy to do, necessarily, because it's a linear walk. You probably have to get dropped off and picked up, but there's a walk along the River Till from Shrewton back through alongside the Till, through the various villages, through to Winterbourne Stoke, through to Berwick St James, to Stapleford. And that it's just a beautiful, gentle landscape, but it's a sort of chalk stream, sometimes Winterbourne, sometimes it's dry, and you get that kind of... So sometimes you go down there and the riverbed is dry as dust, and... You know, you think, well, water's never going to appear again. And you go there again, and you get all the grass is sneaking in the water, and it's clear, and you think, well, this is suddenly come alive with this, you know, wonderful Winterbourne stream. Isn't it? And you can follow that down all the way, and it's wonderful little corners and gentle sort of folds in the land. And the other area that you can't really go wrong in is the Vale of Wardour. It's a sort of geological phenomenon, really, because it's where the stone from Salisbury Cathedral came from. And it's a geological fault, in effect, that exposed all the geology beneath the chalk. So once you get into beyond west of Wilton, it starts opening up in this kind of wedge. By the time you get to Tisbury, you're in sort of Portland geology, which you wouldn't get unless you were much further west or sort of southwest. So you have this sort of opening up into the sort of weird and wonderful sort of geology, and all the buildings obviously made from the stone as well. So you have this quite a magical sort of journey, really, in time. Geological time when you're walking through it. It's, you can pick your routes really, I mean, but if you start in Tisbury, say, and walk to Wardour Castle, get a map, pretty well determines which way you go because there's only one route and you can make a circuit back to Tisbury, and there's a station, at Tisbury. That I would thoroughly recommend. Probably might be wet in winter, need some boots.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Nick Cowan. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities, our graphic artwork was designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and recorded by Simon Sanders at Easytronic.